Okay, thank you. Good morning, colleagues. Welcome on this day, 29 March, day number four of the testimony of Ntuli Mkhwebane. The time now is 21 minutes past 10. We're only starting now. So I've taken 20 minutes of her time because we're waiting for members to fill up. That's the first, and I don't think that's acceptable. We're not starting at 9, we're starting at 10, and we're late with 20 minutes. We should have started at 10, and everybody was here except the members who have just joined. It's a matter we'd have to deal with. Perhaps later on, let me welcome the members who are here and all members on the virtual, those who were early on and those who have just joined the meeting. Acknowledge and welcome the public protector, Advocate Mkhwebane, who was here exactly on time at 10. Apologies for us to keep you waiting. Legal team led by Advocate Mbofu. Evidence leaders. Don't know if they slept here, but they were here very early. Advocate Bauer and Advocate Mayosi. Members of the media with us. Our entire support staff. And the people who brought us here, members of the public in their various platforms. Welcome to our proceedings of the day. Today, as we continue hearing testimony from Advocate Mbofu, Advocate Mkhwebane, don't know why he would be making testimony. Maybe that's what we should do. But anyway, on that light note, thank you very much, colleagues. I want us, having lost those 20 minutes, and we probably are going to be held to it, as I know it. I want to go straight to you, Advocate Mbofu, to start the proceedings. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. My colleague, good morning, everyone. My colleague, Advocate Bauer, we've just agreed that she's going to make one or two announcements. The first one is just an omission of something we jointly wanted to do yesterday, but she also wants to raise another issue.
Well, maybe in case both of you forgot, I will allow her to do that if it has to do with this witness in front of us.
Yes, both.
I have an allergy on issues.
we know
of that. So I don't know what the two of you discuss.
No. I still have
And I hope it will be about that because you all had issues.
I had issues. No, it's not. No, the only ones, the ones I have are the ones you're allergic to. These ones are fine.
No. I'm allergic to anything that is taking us away from interacting with the witness. I hope that whatever that she's going to raise is not taking us away from that. It's relevant to what we're doing now. So let me acknowledge Advocate Bauer. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everybody. Chair, it is relevant in the sense of, I'll explain in a moment. But let me just get the technical thing out of the way. Yesterday, a clip was produced interposing two verbal utterances of Justice Malambo in two separate cases before this committee. And I labored under the misapprehension that what Advocate Mpofu was putting before the committee was him reading out the respective orders. In fact, I had asked and then sent to him, but it's in the judgment we can read the orders. But as it progressed, I realized that what was being given was not the orders that was being read. And in discussing it with Advocate Mpofu, I want it to be clear to members and everybody that that was sound bites out of the judgment that he was handing down on behalf of, I think in both cases it was a full bench. Yes, in both cases it was a full bench.
Yeah.
That Justice Malamba was being recorded. So all that was effectively reading a few lines out of the bigger judgment in doing that. And I think the members must understand that in that context, that was not an order of the judgment. So that's the first clarification that we agreed needed to be made. And the second thing is, Chair, which is maybe...
My understanding was that would have been done deliberately, suppose they wanted us to hear those parts.
Yes.
Is that my...
You're 100% correct, Chair. And in fact, to make it easier, Chair, you'll remember that on the 16th, when we were last year, we actually then had taken the committee to the actual part of the judgment, in the written part. All that was happening yesterday was just to play that same thing. So the references are as they were on the 16th to the part of the judgment. But I think we just wanted to clarify, because I think it was me actually who said it was the order. It's okay. The body of the judgment, yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that.
And the second issue, which I at the outset say Advocate Mpofu doesn't agree with, he's allergic to what I'm about to put
in the committee.
So there seems to be a plethora of allergies. Chair, Advocate Mpofu's reached what we all understand to be the end of the public protector's evidence in respect of CR 17. I would like to do my questioning on CR 17 at this juncture. I understand that before he proceeds on to the next topic, which I understand is the SARS/Gordhan related matter. I understand that what I'm asking is a different approach, but I do this for two reasons, essentially. There is a lot of matter before this committee. The committee currently has fresh in their mind that which has been put to them over the last few days in respect of CR 17. And so it would dovetail with me putting the questions to the witness now, while it's also fresh in her mind, rather than in 3 weeks' time or 4 weeks' time or 2 months' time, depending on where things go in this inquiry at all, when we would have all forgotten what was being said before that. So that is the basis for it. The second advantage to this means is that the respective teams would have then finished off on a particular section, and we could then simultaneously, as we work up our report, which would make the report writing or the heads of argument, rather for that purpose, which comes near the end as a constant. At the moment, it's incredibly difficult to start working on heads. We've got frameworks, etc., but the essence of it on the CR 17, we can actually only get to it by the time all the evidence is finished. Now, I know that this is an inquisitorial process, and hence the committee, or the chair, has a description in respect of how the questioning is to be done. And I've looked at it in various ways. I don't see any prejudice the public protector in that regard, but it's not for me to raise that. It's Advocate Mpofu to deal with that. Chair, I can see you disinclined to entertain me. I also don't...
I've asked Advocate Mkhwebane yesterday not to read any body languages, and so I want to repeat that to you as well. If you want to read my body, it will be the most confusing thing you can do. Because what you think I'm doing or I'm agreeing to might not be. So please go ahead and not read my body.
We are at 10:30 already. I don't want what is almost an innocuous request on my part to take 2 hours. Yeah, Advocate Paul for Honor and Rule, because at the end of the day, we don't really want this request. If you're going to say no and consider it, bear in mind that this next section is a SARS unit matter, and you may want to say to me, I'm not going to let you do it on CR17 alone. When he finishes the SARS unit matter, then you take those two issues together before he starts on CX and FREDA. But at the end of the day, we're going to sit with a lump of information that's going to be left today's question on, and that's my only point.
All right, thank you, Advocate Bauer. I'm waiting both for you brought this. I want to come back to you to quickly respond to what you're hearing. You introduced this.
Sir, no, you're killing the messenger, sir. I was only asked to give space to my learned friend, but by no means I was party to the first point that she raised, but this one I'm disowning any involvement whatsoever. No, Chair, it's just completely impractical what is being suggested. I'm quite sympathetic to the fact that this witness is not like other witnesses and the evidence is quite bulky. When we're talking about the witness statement already in total is 250 pages. So that alone is unusual. So I acknowledge that. But Chair, what is being proposed is completely unworkable for various reasons. The directives are very clear that witnesses give their evidence and, then they get cross-examined in my case, or questions are put by the evidence leaders, and then the members ask questions, and then I re-examine in the case of this witness. Now, imagine, Chair, if we're going to do that for every item. We have about 5-6 broad topics that Advocate Bauer and I have identified broadly. It's CR17, it's Rogue, a so-called Rogue Unit, CX, Pleiade. There's one other that just slips my mind. Oh, HR, the HR issues, which is a whole cluster on its own. And then we created another category called other, miscellaneous. Yeah. Now, imagine if for all those 5 or 6 units who are going to do this, that would literally mean we do the CR17, then there's questions put by evidence leaders, questions put by members, re-examination. I don't know, maybe we might even have argument on it. So I'm just exaggerating for effect. But I'm just saying that it's... And then we do that, then we come back, and we know already the reason why we had the so-called landscaping chair, which you kindly allowed, was exactly because that section is cross-cutting through all the other 5 teams. And it was to avoid repeating it every time we have a new section, we now have to give another long landscaping for a whole day or whatever. That day was spent for the entire evidence, yeah, as it were. So quite apart from the impracticalities, it would also waste time. I can assure you. Firstly, it's the first time I hear of it. One of my learned juniors, when I was trying to explain it and to sell it to my team, she said, I'm giving it away now, and I say she. Yeah, well, it was a she.
There are 3 she's there.
Yeah, she's somewhere there.
But there are 3 she's there.
So she said it would be like if there was a case and there was charges of murder and robbery and possession of firearms. Then we say, okay, now let's just do the murder.
Okay.
And then you cross-examine and finish.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You come back and say, let's do the robbery.
That's exaggerating it from the sheep.
But the point, I think, is made. No, Chair, so we're totally against that proposal. It will make the process cumbersome, unwieldy, and unworkable.
May I ask you to pause there so that we don't go, so that I'm able to, so we quickly make a ruling in this regard. I think I hear Advocate Bauer's reasoning And I think you also agree with that reasoning in terms of the almost acres of information, the bulkiness of what we have to go through. So in that regard, it's persuasive. But quite clearly, to perhaps to remain consistent, I think you've raised a number of issues. The practicality is key, because we would not have featured that in our planning. I think that's maybe there's something we overlooked in the planning in that regard. I would want to on the side of us not disturbing the flow and continue as we have planned. If after the day the two of you think there's any other as part of the whatever you call it, the back room, in the way of how we deal with that, I think we'll be open to that. But I would want to make that ruling that we proceed as would have planned, because it's quite a smart thing, because it's relevant to the witness, but it's not what's on the agenda, which I'm always insisting on and consistent. Advocate Bauer?
Yeah, I really don't want, I just want to make 3 points. Firstly, this is a novel process. Secondly, our timetable has changed along the way all the time. And thirdly, this is not the witness. This is the public protector, who is the subject matter of this inquiry, coming to give her version. So the rules that apply to witnesses don't necessarily apply to the public protector. I just want to say that. But you've made your ruling, Chair. I may ask again after the second section.
That's fine. I hear that too. Thank you for that. I think the issue of it being a novel process is convincing, but I make the ruling because I have an allergy that we introduce rules in the middle of a process, but I will be open to whatever discussions thereafter. Advocate Mpofu, we have taken now altogether 38 minutes of your time.
Thank you.
From the start to now. Yes. So you're starting 38 minutes later. That is noted.
Thank you, sir.
Don't be factored in whatever that we do.
No, thank you, sir.
So may I now hand over to you?
Thank you, sir. Sir, let me just go straight into it, but maybe just hopefully not to waste more another extra minute. I just wanted to agree with you that the fact that something I was going to say when I was addressing you, proposal for it to work, it would only work if it was by agreement between the parties, and we will continue to engage in. Okay. Thanks. All right. And I know Advocate Bauer is going to say there are no parties, but there are. You know what I mean. Thank you. Thank you, Jefferson. Right. I did say I was just going to sweep up on a few issues, I promise I won't make it long, unnecessarily long. Good morning, Public Protector.
Good morning, SC Chairperson, members of the committee, evidence leaders.
All right. So there are just two or three issues just round up the CR17 issue. The first issue comes from a section of the, just one second. Oh, sorry. I'm told I was again. I'll give you a reference. But it's if you can go to 5.2.5.17 of the...
That's very
violent.
Martin and Tembi Nkosi Ngoma would not appreciate that.
I don't think
that,
he
has
a distraction of parliamentary properties. 5.3.2.27. 1.17. Yeah. Of the Musasa report. The one we had yesterday.
Let's just go there, Tsepo. It's in and out. We'll go in there and get out and come to the goddamn matter. Page number.
I'll ask the PP to assist. PP, that reference to the 350. What's the typed page number?
The reference to?
5.2
point.
And 5.17.
Okay.
That's the typed page number.
Page, okay. So in the report is page 57.
57. Thank you.
Page 57. In the Bosasa report.
Yes.
The Bosasa report.
Oh, 56, that's fine.
Okay.
Close enough. Okay. Thank you, sir. Right. Maybe, yeah, okay, that's fine. Just leave it there. I'll ask questions building up to it. Yeah. Now, I just wanted to clarify something regarding this matter, because again, we always have to situate these things in the context of this inquiry. So this inquiry is not a public protector's investigation, neither is it a court proceedings. It has a life of its own. So now and again, as the independent panel said, we always have to understand that the judgments were made in a particular context of a review application and so on. So, you know, we spoke last week or a week before that of the big figures, and we established that the CR17 managers, for example, had given a figure of 200 million as the total of the donations on the one hand. The president in the Zondo Commission gave another figure of 300 million. And here we added up some of the figures, and I think it came to about 1.2 billion. I remember the PP struggled with the arithmetic, but she has since been able to establish that. But I just thought, okay, that might be interesting to all sorts of people. But what we are concerned with here, Chair, which I really want to, this is what I want to zoom into, is actually a minor issue where it doesn't matter whether it was a billion, a 100 billion, or whatever. Because as I'm going to refer you to the actual requirement for declarations, people will be surprised that the threshold is actually 350 rand. So, you know, so let's not be bamboozled so much by the billions. The actual requirement is very mundane and ordinary, and which is why I wanted to refer to ask you, public protector, to take the committee through that paragraph 5.2.5.17, and maybe read it out first and then explain its significance in your investigation.
Just before you do that, Professor Protector, just a pause.
I'm on my side, and admittedly, I may not pay as much attention as I should have yesterday afternoon. But I'm not sure that I heard the part of where the PP confirmed that was 1.2 billion.
Okay, you'll hear it now. PP, last 10 days ago, when we were talking about the, I don't want to go back to those figures now. You remember the figures we spoke about, 400 million here, 300 million there, 50 million there, and so on. And I remember putting a question to you, and you then said, well, it's around about whatever, I can't even remember the figure you gave, but you had a disclaimer that you're not good with making those additions. And at least now you've had 10 days to do the arithmetic. Yeah, do you have a rounded figure of those amounts so that we don't have to go back there and waste time?
Thank you, Chairperson. Last week when I testified, yes, we calculated, and I said I did not calculate how much it was, because I said indeed there were amounts of around 400 million, 300 million, 300 million. And I said, I wouldn't say it's a total. In fact, I didn't calculate all of them. And I think I qualified as well that even if we can just calculate and say 300 plus this, that's an estimation. Today, I'm saying it's an estimation of that, possibly 1.2 billion. But I'm still saying in that estimation, I remember there were various accounts, EFG2, there is the Standard Bank account, FNB account. So monies were moving from here to here, from here to here. So it's 1.2, but estimation, but it might not, you'll find that sometimes maybe same money moved twice. So it's just an estimation.
Right.
Yeah.
And the
three campaigns managers who were interviewed, they were estimating the amount to around 200 million.
Yes. Okay. Again, I don't want this to be fixated. In fact, the whole point of this questioning is so that we don't get too much fixated in the numbers. So I'm trying to get out of that mode. But be that as it may, now that you've given that explanation about movement of monies from this account to that account, what role did that very fact play in your referral to the NPA regarding the question of so-called round-tripping of the money?
Yes. Remember, my testimony last week, I indicated that there was movement of money from this EFG2, the attorneys who created the trust. And I must correct today as well, Chairperson, that the Riatenda Trust was created by the, I'm correcting my previous indication that there's various people who benefited or money was transferred into their accounts. I think when we were showing the articles that the articles published the information before it was sealed. So it's EFG2, there is Riatenda Trust. The Riatenda Trust, the members of that trust are actually the campaigns managers, not Khumbudzo. Then Khumbudzo as a beneficiary and Bosiwela and I think Siwaya, she is the sole director of Pora Farms. So I'm correcting that. And remember, there was the article which was shown of IOL, and I insisted that there was the Mail and Guardian article which showed how the monies moved. And we were supposed to upload that article, and we were still trying to find it. So that article is found. We can just share it so that members, when they go through this, they can see. Because the main intention, Chairperson, remember, was what evidence was before me, which made me to come to this conclusion. So it's just proving that point that I didn't have any, like, relying on some hearsay or whatever, but it was the evidence before me which I relied on. So
yeah, maybe so that we you walk slowly with us, because I am aware that in that week you certainly did say Ms. Ndabeni was the sole director of the attender.
Exactly.
So do I understand what the correction is today on record?
On record.
You can just repeat and summarize that. So then we because you're now indicating that in fact Reattender, they are members of Reattender beyond. So I just want to clear my mind that I follow the correction properly.
Okay. So the Ms. Nkumbuzo is not the sole director or the trustee. That trust, the Reattender trust, the members of that trust are the people who were the campaigns managers. For instance, James Mutlatsi, and then I think James Mutlatsi and Doné were members of that trust. Then there were others.
Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt. Again, for the same reason as the chair, I think let's give the full names. So, Doné, when you say Doné, you mean Ms. Doné Nicole?
Nicole.
Yes.
Yes. So James Mutlatsi, Doné Nicole, and then there were other two members. I won't mention them because they are part of that particular trust. I will mention these two because I interviewed them. And then Ms. Nkumbuzo is the director, sole director of Pora Farms. And
Three
Pora Attend. Farms is
so
the
director of Pora, not Reattend.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And that the Pora or Cora Farms?
Pora Farms,
yeah.
Yes.
That's one of the entities that were in, or rather, to which any monies went through.
Yes, and paragraph 263 of my affidavit, I said some of the beneficiaries of donations were senior members of the ANC and officials or functionaries of the CR17 campaign. Ms. Park, Mr. Dugwana, Ms. Siweya, Ms. Nchaveni. So those were the people where monies were moving from this linked environmental services account, or either from Reattender directly into various accounts.
Maybe, again, just for clarification purposes, for those of us who didn't go in depth luckily into this, can you maybe explain to the to the committee then, the relationship between what you've just said and EFG2? So in other words, was EFG2 the vehicle through which those monies were distributed, or it was one of the entities that you have mentioned?
Doné, I explained that during the interview of Doné, in the report is there. Doné is the one who approached the attorneys, EFG2, Edelstein Faber Krobler Incorporated. And then they, within the attorney's firm, they created a trust account. So all donors were depositing there into that trust account. And then they will then move the monies to Reattender, to environmental linked environmental services. And then it's paid to various beneficiaries, various service providers. So that's how the monies move. But then, Chairperson, as I said, that our focus was following the 500,000. hence then the uncovering of all this.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. I think both the chain are clear now.
So have you uncovered or stumbled on it?
Okay.
You uncovered or stumbled on it?
I think...
These are the issues.
Okay, with the 500,000, we were just following the 500,000. Then we stopped. Well, okay, maybe stumbled or whatever.
No problem. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, this is a pickup. So are you still
Yes, sir. Yes, yes. No, I'm done. We're done with the clarification. Thank you,
okay.
Chair. I was piggybacking on your clarity seeking. Thank you. So, just to finish that issue, the maybe we should tap go to 31.7.17. This chair is the MNG article that the PP referred to, remember last week when she said when we showed that other one with Peter Rampage and there were snide remarks about it, she did say that there was another clearer picture. So again, without going into much, you can't enlarge. No, okay. Sorry, now my age is showing up. I need to look at the enlarged version. Alright. Alright, just take us to, not the whole list, but at least some of the entities that you have already identified in your evidence. On that list number six, for example, the Pore Farms, is that
the one
that you were referring to?
Which I was referring to, yes.
In respect of which the sole director or member, or whatever, if it was a trust, I don't know what kind of entity it was, but the sole person was current Minister Kumbutso Shabane.
Yes.
And which
and
then,
I think Jefferson,
sorry, that just so that we finish that one. The and it according to this that entity received 8,484,000.
Yes.
Okay. Now you can make a comment, Pepe.
According to our estimation, it was around actually 5 point something million. But these ones had this. Hence, Chairperson, I'm saying the calculations, it was estimations and, yeah. And then also the three entities that made the most financial transaction. So up there, it shows this linked environmental services. The one I said, some of the campaigns managers were part of the directors. And Sepo, if you can just scroll down. And then there's Riatenda. Then there is this Edelstein Faber problem because they are part of the report. Sepo, if you can scroll down. Yes, up the three entities. So that's the most relevant information which I have in the report.
Right, yes. And again, just to remind people, Edelstein Faber problem is EFG.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, okay. Right. Okay, Riatenda is that. Oh, yes, Lynx is the last one. Oh, good, 8 million. Okay. And then the others weren't, it's individuals or entities by the look of things. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Jay. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Now,
I will keep your promise.
I will.
Just reflect on this.
And unfortunately, yes.
To the
actual issue. Yeah.
Yes.
Let's go back to that. That page with 5.2.17. Thank you, Chair. All right. While Sapo is doing that, let me just develop the point that I was at the point where I was asking you to read the. Yes. Thank you. 5.2.5.17.
Actually, I think just to clarify, let's start from 5.2.5 because that's the response of the president to show that we've incorporated it in the report.
Yes. Okay.
And he is addressing exactly that 500,000 issues in dispute, because how we structure our reports, chairperson, is that when a complaint is lodged, I explained yesterday, then we've got various issues. When we have an issue at the beginning of our investigation, then all the evidence we are collating, we will have to get the evidence of that issue. 5.2, the issue was whether the president improperly and in violation of the provisions of the Executive Ethics Code and disclosure of members' interest for the National Assembly and Permanent Council members exposed himself to any situation involving the risk of a conflict. So, Tepo, if you can just scroll 5.2. The same issue, 5.2.
Yeah, beginning of that section.
Yeah.
Right. That's
so this is the issue we were investigating. And then when we investigate an issue, investigators, then we go to common cause issues, issues which are not in dispute. So that's the issue, the 500,000, which was made to African Global into EFG attorney's account, and then for the campaign of the president election campaign.
Okay. Can you just pause the PP again? Because remember, we're using this also as a to educate ourselves about this, how these reports work. Yeah. So the reason that part you say is common cause is obviously because that's actually information coming from the president himself.
Correct.
When he was making the correction of his answer to Mr. Maiman.
Correct.
And he says, no, I made a mistake. I said it was my son and I looked him in the eyes, what have you. But now I've realized that it's EFG. So therefore it's common cause. Nobody disputed that.
Definitely.
Okay, let's go.
And the common cause also again that even if after the correction, as I told the chairperson yesterday, that we asked all this range of questions because it was about the son. Hence, as well, it's common cause that after we received that, indeed, the son as well was doing business, but we were not investigating the son. Then that's why the next paragraph I'm saying the issue was the president and his involvement. So now scroll up, Sepo, we go to the issue in dispute. So the president, and it shows here that we've incorporated in the report and we have involved him in the investigation, and then he responds. He, like president, submitted a supplementary statement to my office where he was clarifying the issue of conflict and his obligation of the National Assembly to disclose financial interest received in his private capacity as a member of a political party, because that's what I'm being accused of, that in the matter I didn't have jurisdiction. So this is the response directly from the report. This was part of the Rule 53 before all the judges. So he is then acknowledging that in light of your questions regarding the issue of disclosure of interest, I thought it appropriate to address you in this regard. During our discussion regarding the 500,000 donation that was paid by AGO into a law firm, Absa Trust account, towards my presidential campaign for the presidency of the ANC, you seem to suggest that the donation amounted to a benefit and that it ought to have been disclosed. So that's where the president is addressing that issue. And then he then went further to indicate that he is a member of parliament as a deputy president, acknowledging, and then in my capacity, I disclosed interest as required by the executive ethics code every year. I continue to do so in my since my election as president in February 2018. Yes. So this paragraph we wanted to go to was then the president acknowledging that he was supposed to, and based on the provision, I disclose share, financial interest in companies, other corporate sponsorships, gifts, other hospitalities, hospitality, benefits of material nature, foreign travel, land and immovable property, and pensions. So I'm also aware of my duty to disclose such information in relation to my spouse and my dependent children. So that's what the president, it shows that he understood as the deputy president, as the member of parliament, he was supposed to disclose. So then he went further and said, since becoming a member of parliament and a member of the executive, I've taken care to be guided by Section 2 of the Executive Members Ethics Act. Again, the president acknowledging that he knows what Section 2.1 says, which requires the president to publish a code, and then which also indicate that members must comply when performing their official duties. So then we can move to that part which you wanted us to go to.
5.2.5.17.
Yes. When the president, it's still part of his response, that the Executive Ethics Act states that the disclosure of benefits is required. Firstly, it is a if it is a material benefit, and secondly, if it's received by the member. Although the donation may be regarded as a material in nature, on the basis that even the gifts above the value of 350 are subject to disclosure, and I think that's what I said. The donation was not received by myself. Instead, it was received by the CR17 campaign in strict confidence. In essence, the donation was not made to a member. So that was the argument which the president has raised.
Yeah. Perfect.
And then he went further that I had no knowledge of the donation and therefore cannot reasonably be expected to have disclosed it when it was made, even if there was an obligation to do so, which there was not.
Okay.
Yes.
Fine. Thank you. I think then that chairperson, that the reason why we bring this to the attention is that, again, you know, we get buried in all this paper. But the essence, 5.2.5.17 and 5.2.5.18 is the essence of this entire thing. Remember yesterday we said there were two defenses, quote unquote. It's I did not benefit, and I did not know. So that's where you find those two. 5.2.5.17 says I did not benefit. The benefit was received by the CR17 campaign. I mean, I don't even know if that's a legal entity. It's just a thing. But apparently that's the thing that received the benefit, not him. So that's his defense there. And then the next one, and the thing called CR17 campaign is clearly not a member of parliament. And so that's the purported defense. And then the next one is, okay, even if I had no knowledge of the donation and therefore cannot reasonably be expected to have disclosed it. That's the thing about it was kept away from me. I didn't know who the people were, even though I addressed them at dinner. So that was the, thank you. All right, thank you. Now, the only point really that I wanted to make is that despite the big amounts and so on, as far as you are concerned, the threshold for declaration is 350.
Correct.
So whether it was 200 million, 300 million, 1.2 billion, 10,000 rand, the as far as the law is concerned, all you would have been interested in is whether the duty to declare had been triggered.
That's as simple as that. Remember, again, still repeating to members chairperson, members of the public, going forward, know that the public protector will check what happened, what should have happened, where is the gap there, what is the law saying, and how to remedy that purely. So here, he acknowledged that 500,000 was from Busasa, and he was the member, he was the deputy president, and yes, he says he declared, he's declaring, but when we check the declaration, he never declared, and he acknowledged that he participated in the dinners. We had a person who attended who donated, Gavin Watson, but Wes, also before me, I had this evidence which we've shown that the bank statements, the emails, where he even personally said, move 75 million or whatever to Riatenda and all those. So that's why when the judges are saying, and even the panel is saying, I second guess, I think that's what they said. And I didn't take the precedent. So for me, the decision was taken, and when the drafter of the evidence and the analysis of the evidence, which is done by the chief investigator, when it's brought to me, I'm also saying we cannot just make accusation. What is the source? Where is the evidence? And that's what we did. So we were following this 500,000, the donation, and that's it. And he never declared it according to the record in Parliament.
Thank you. And I think, I think you've canvassed that mopping up exercise.
Chuck, if please allow me.
I'm patient because you have indicated last night, yesterday, that it's just one or two issues. I'm eager that we...
Yes, we definitely are, Chuck.
I think the points are well covered. Thank you.
Yes.
But proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes. No. Okay, I was actually going to start this question by saying at the risk of the chairperson is stopping me, but that risk is now already occurred. I do want to emphasize this. As I say, I mean, this is a highly controversial and political matter and so on, and it might get politicized, but we must not be waylaid by that. So the point I'm simply making is that assume the chairperson said you stumbled into all those other millions. Assume you had not stumbled into anything for a minute. Assume you didn't stumble into the bank statements, the emails and all the things. Okay, maybe not the emails, because the emails have the different people, but let's say the bank statements and the other big amounts and what have you. Purely on the basis of the 500,000 amount, which the president himself brought to the attention of Parliament as having been received by the CR17 campaign, and which is obviously more than 350 rand. Just on the basis of that, forget the big amounts, this was your conclusion that there had been a breach of the Members' Ethics Act sustained?
Definitely it was, because that was the focus, actually, 500,000. And even if it was more than 1,000 rands or 10,000 rands, and if he didn't acknowledge that and confirm that and the complaint is lodged, we wouldn't have known about that. We wouldn't have investigated and the complaint lodged by the DA. Not to say me following up or saying, President, you said this, now you're correcting us the issue of own initiative. That's not the case. I mean, the investigation was done in terms of the Executive Members Ethics Act. Member of Parliament complained. The investigation was conducted. And I think that's why, Chairperson, it's very critical that I place this on record, still repeat. It means then that my version currently, because that's what I'm presenting, considering the fact that certain information is also sealed. And I think it was going to be, and the president acknowledged at the Zondo Commission that it's around 300 million. But then it was also going to help the committee to directly also engage the president on the matter. But you've taken a decision that you are not going to call him as a witness. So I think then the information which I'm presenting, assisting the committee to decide on this charge, then it means my version will be the only version which is before you and the evidence I'm presenting currently, just to make sure that I show to the committee that this was done honestly without any ulterior motives, and I was just doing my work the best I know how, according to the constitution, the law, and these are the relevant prescripts I followed, the Executive Members Ethics Act. And the president was the member of the of parliament as a deputy by then when the money was paid, and was obligated as well to declare in terms of that. And when we checked the records in parliament, the declaration of this amount was not made. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Now, you've helped me out. Then I want to ask you about the implications of not calling the president. Mm. So the last point then is the... To round this all up, I'm now spilling out. So this last question spills us out of the 500,000. You've answered about that. And we know that we don't have, and you are not at liberty to share the sealed documents.
Yes.
The you've referred to all this movement of money, bank statements, emails, and what have you. But what we do have access to is what is at paragraph 261 of your statement. And that just gives us a glimpse or a window. Page 261, paragraph 261, suppose. And I'll just ask you to comment on the implications of that.
And hide the account, sir.
Sorry, pardon?
Suppo, hide the account.
Oh, the account number, Suppo? Yeah. Just go fill up until that line of account number.
Yeah.
After so account number. Where it says account number. Go more. Yeah. So I'm saying just to close it off then. So you stumble then over all sorts of information, and one of them says, "Hi, Donald. Thank you for assisting with the internet banking and the other day. Could you kindly transfer an amount of 20 million from the money market investment that was left after we shifted, so the person is including himself, after we shifted 75 million from the money market select to reattend the trust standard bank account number, blank, 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 then go down and hide the thing from the top now. In other words, exclude just the following line." Yeah. And we can read the part that is not shown, but that is not controversial. It says, "I shall call you to confirm all this." Signed, Cyril.
Yes. And
okay.
Now, that shows that he knew he was involved in the running. As I said, that even these monies which were transferred to the Cyril Ramaphosa Foundation, but this is clearly showing that he was involved, but as well that the dinners he confirmed he went and he addressed those people who participated.
Yeah, so therefore to say you disbelieved him or you didn't trust his bona fides or whatever it is, without any reason, which is really what was the conclusion of the court. In the light of this, is that sustainable?
It's not sustainable.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. That's what I wanted to
say.
Thank you so much. Okay. Right. Okay. Now, All right. Okay. I just want the Chair, if you allow me, I'm just going to deal again with this, a very small section on the vision here. You'll see the connection. I'm just building up to our next section. If you go to paragraph 154 of your statement, that's 561, type 65, triple. 154. Right. Okay. So you had the what you call Vision 2023.
Correct.
And now it's 2023.
Yes.
Okay. So, if you can, and I just want the highlights, please, and you'll see the connection when we get to the next big section. So you come into the office, October 2016. You see what you see. You find what you find, and then at some stage you then build your vision for the non-renewable 7-year term ahead. Correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. And you then had, and I'm doing this also because of something that we raise in the second statement, but we'll deal with it when we get there, which is that, and I'd like members to keep this at the back of their minds, that, you know, all these cases that we are busy with here are the, what you call it, high-profile cases, you know, CR17, Rogue Unit, CX, Freda, and so on. And those are four or five big cases. And we lose sight of the 50,000 cases of so-called Gogo Dlamini, Mr. Nyatela, Mr. Siabi type of customers. Yeah. So can you just broadly take us through the headline of the vision, and they are set out in paragraph 157. The first one is access. The next one is vernacular. The other one is footprint. Other one is agreement. Other one is safe haven. Other one is rights. Then complaints resolution. And the last one, I think, is self-protection. Yeah.
Thank you.
Can you just capture the vision without going into the minute details as to what really you had in mind for your 7 years?
Okay, thanks. Chairperson would, since he sits in the Portfolio Committee on Justice, every time we explain this, but it will help for other members of the committee, but even the public out there to understand that when I joined the institution in 2016, and thanks to also, I need to acknowledge Mr. Themba Dlamini, who was the CEO then of Public Protector South Africa, after we've addressed various stakeholders. And then we said, and then he said, PP, we need to come up with your vision for the next 7 years so that we know what you would want to achieve. So this is the Vision 2023, and it was drafted in such a way that we expand the access. This is a constitutional obligation. Section 182, 4 of the Constitution requires the public protector to be accessible. I think during my interview, I remember I was asked how am I going to make sure that I reach the community of Umhlawia, Lingana, and all those. So the issue of access was to make sure that because our institution is free, the services you don't charge, and then we address the issue of access. And I think also, sorry, Chairperson, the main issue here is that indeed the focus is on these five matters. And I think in the landscaping, we indicated that that issue of sitting here because of the so-called the untouchables. So the focus of my mandate was purely on this. So on the issue of access, That's what we intended to do. And access is achieved through the roadshows every year. There's outreach, community outreach programs, which some have been accused that there's monies which were taken. We'll deal with that and explain what actually transpired. But outreach is continuing and how we can reach a bigger reach of community when outreach is concerned.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt, but again, just to assist the members who are listening to this, or even members of the public. So you've just dealt with access. Now, access, according to your statement, then, is the first pillar of your eight-pillar vision. Okay, good. All right. Because, you see, we're doing this against the background of what you said 2 weeks ago or whenever we were here, that when you go to the office, nobody said, here's your job description, here's what is expected of you and so on. You had to also design what the roadmap should be. And of course, you had to get the buy-in of Parliament. As you say, you presented this vision to Parliament, correct?
It's correct, because every year when I present the annual report, we still take them through this vision and how far we are in implementing the vision.
Okay, good. So what was the second pillar?
It's vernacular, meaning the 11 official languages, because access, which I always say, it's not about the building or the offices which we have. It's impossible for us to have buildings in each, every corner of the country. So also the issue of languages, because then taking it from what Nelson Mandela said, if you speak to a person, when you speak in their languages, you speak to their heart. So that also we took into consideration, the indigenous languages and using community radio stations, all the, SABC broadcasters, because they are accessible and so that people can understand and access this very important institution.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, the third one?
It's footprint.
Uh-huh.
So since we can't have the resources to have an office in each corner, then we had this footprint to expand our footprint. We only had 19 offices of the Public Protector, but then the Kuruman one was closed because of the challenges that we didn't have enough people, but then we needed to consider other options. Then other issues which footprint entails is that we identify traditional offices, we identify municipal offices, and engage then with various other departments to expand our footprint. Hence, it will link to agreements. Agreements meaning memorandum of understanding with the Department of Justice, COCTA, various traditional councils. We've established a number of service points, because before my suspension, we were also then developing a way of having AMA drop boxes in various traditional councils, so that members of the community, Mabene Imbizo, Lekhotla, they can then, when they are going there, I mean, a chief or inkosi will say, my people have a challenge of IDs, Home Affairs is not doing this, or the issues of road infrastructure, children cannot go through. So this was mostly then dealing with that. And my achievement is that we signed a number of those agreements, and then we are maintaining them. The complaints are lodged. The office will then collect those, and then we process or we refer. That is to make sure that we are a safe haven to the members of the public, the poor, the marginalized, people who cannot exercise their own right to engage and to be assisted by public servants. So that's the other pillar.
Sure.
And then for us was to make sure that to uproot the issues of the maladministration which is occurring in state affairs.
Okay, thank you. That's the chairperson will be proud of you. because in that answer you've covered the fourth pillar as well as the fifth one, which is safe haven.
Yes, the fifth one. Yes, safe haven.
So let's move to the sixth one.
The sixth one is the, you know, in a number of instances, it's only the empowered or those who are educated who will exercise their rights, who will hold the public servants to account. It's very rare that you'll find rural communities exercising their right and making sure that they are holding the public to account. So when we conduct roadshows, when we engage with them, and when we involve amakhosi and everyone, using them as our ambassadors as well to engage their communities. So in this instance, we are also then empowering members of the public to exercise their rights. So it's very rare to find Abu Nyatela or Abu Mr. Siabi who are able to exercise their rights and hold the those who are public servants or those in power to account. Mm. So this is where we also deal with a lot of systemic challenges. In other words, we are saying to the people, deal with that public servant yourself, expect and demand service instead of complaining, but then you must be on your own and stand for your own right, deal with it, so that as an institution we can focus on systemic challenges and propose policy changes. So the next one is complaints resolution number 7. This one is also very, very critical. Well, the chairperson will know because the Justice Portfolio Committee, that's where I would say. This one also is to make sure that there are sector ombudsman. I mean, I indicated that you'll find the tax ombudsman. When we engage with them, they will tell you in a year we process more than 2,000 complaints from members of the public about delay to pay their tax issues. And if we didn't have the tax ombudsman, those people would have approached the public protector. So more than 2,000 people approaching us because of the delay to pay. So we encourage the establishment of health ombudsman as well, which is also helping. The issue of military ombudsman, especially members of the military of the service who are then in communities, and there's something which needs to be resolved, especially it involves the members of SANDF. So this help a lot, and what we've done as well is that engage with like Department of Home Affairs. We've got an MOU with them. All complaints relating to Home Affairs, instead of us investigating them, we then collate them. Actually, it has been like that, but now we formalize that structure and refer to Home Affairs, update us. How far are you in processing Advocate Matlape's ID? How far are you in doing this? Master's Office as well, delays in processing the issues of deceased estate. So there's an arrangement that how quickly can you process that? We're doing that so that we remove a lot of burden in the institution due to financial constraints, due to the fact that we don't have enough capacity. So that has been achieved, and a number of bodies have those internal complaints mechanisms. In various municipalities, for instance, Tshwane, we've advised them, Johannesburg has a municipality ombudsman, where members of the public can go to that and complain about service, billing, those manual issues, so that we are not we are not doing the work of the public servants as the public protector. So this is the very critical one which can help a lot, and so that when members of the public, they can't get assistance from these institutions, then it's escalated to the public protector. As a public protector, we only deal with systemic challenges. Then the last one is self-protection. Uh-huh. Self-protection, meaning people must be their own liberators. I always say I want each member of the public to be a public protector. So after we've empowered them. And this chairperson, I would say, were, before my suspension, we were testing the app. Because for me, if each and every family, children have smartphones, we have the public protector app. So this one, a person sitting at home, a child, will then advise Ugogo that, okay, you have a challenge with your pension, let's see, there's this public protector app, if it can be promoted, then they would know that if I have this challenge, which institution can help me. And this app also not only helps the issue of our mandate or that you have challenges in the public service. You might have the challenge with your short-term insurance. You might have your challenge with any other private company. But what we do is that because people also come to us thinking that we investigate private companies, which we don't. So this app will tell you if you don't receive service from your insurance, then here's the contact of the short-term insurance. Here's the contact of the banking ombudsman. Here's the contact. So this was the intention which one had. And I must indicate that it's 2023 indeed, and we've achieved a lot in this particular issue. So those are the visions, Chairperson. Yes. In fact, the pillars of Vision 2023.
Yes. Okay. Chair, just allow me one more issue just before the break. All right. Okay, then. Thank you so much, PP. I think then we'll unless if there's any suggestion that any of those pillars were not achieved or being significantly achieved as at the time of your suspension, and hopefully at the time of the end of your contract in October, when you go back to the office, then we will assume then that whatever reports you gave to the portfolio committee vindicate that a statement of having achieved what you set out to achieve and which you had shared with this parliament. Right. Then after that section, and we won't go through it now, so to save time, but just to direct the members, there's a section that deals with your annual reports since assumption of office. And I think you did say ironically that you were even, the first report you actually presented to Parliament was not even your report. It was Advocate Matonsela's one. It just so happened. So putting that aside, yours would then, that one would have been 2015, 2016, the one that you were presenting shall we say, on behalf of Advocate Matonsa.
Yes, it's correct. That's the one.
Yeah. And then, so now from 2016-17 up to now, you were now presenting your reports, as it were.
Actually, there's a report. It's just that we need to be sure 2016-15-16 or 2016-17. But then, remember, a financial year government is that the performance of the institution from 2015 year end of the financial year is April, so it was the year end April 2016, so it was that
March,
yes, and then it was that report which unfortunately I had to present. And is that report which unfortunately as well caused a lot of uproar, the issue of just the magnifying of my, whatever I say, because it was blown out of proportion that I'm criticizing my predecessor. Why am I not, because that's where the issue of the donations, that report was showing that there were donor funds, which indeed I agree with my predecessor, it was done properly through the process. But then the question was the comments by members of the committee and being a learning person, also me saying, no, I wouldn't be using donor funds because they've got also implications if you do that. Then I was criticized about that. And that's where as well, Chairperson, the issue of Malunga was raised. Not me, because the members of the parliament were saying we are concerned about this, as if I appointed Malunga. But then I was then expected to deal with that matter. What are you doing? You need to, we can't have a situation where a person working in this institution is not having. So it's not me who went around and did that. So that's where then also some of my problems started.
Yes. And was that the Malunga issue? Did it have
of security clearance.
Security clearance?
Yes.
All right. In other words, to even make it even more graphic, the members of Parliament were rightly so raising with you the issue of the absence of security clearance for the Deputy Public Protector, but that would have been against the security policy that Professor Madonsela had introduced, not you.
Definitely, but again, it's just that sometimes, yes, members of the committee were concerned that during the interviews, because that's what transpired. I mean, they are members of the public. They are representing members of the public among members of parliament. So that's where they raised those issues that there's this issue, and then public protector deal with it. So by then, I don't know whether they knew there was a security police, but then it's me who discovered all those, okay, what is happening? And especially having worked as state security for 3 months, besides at home affairs, when I was working there, being deployed in China, it was a requirement at that level to be having a security clearance. So for me, a lot of things I discovered when I then was in the office and promising members of the portfolio committee, because that's where I account on the operations of the institution. So I think that's where some of the unnecessary attacks and wrong reporting by the media started.
Yeah. And
Sorry, just another bit of clarification. I'm not clear whether it was raised during Mr. Malunga's interview with the portfolio committee raised it. Can the
I thought she meant the interviews for the public protector, but I was just assuming. I think let the public protector explain. Where was this matter raised, or how had it arisen for it to be raised in your first encounter with the portfolio?
During my first encounter with the portfolio committee was when I presented my predecessor's annual report.
Right.
And it was, I was appointed 15 of October, which was a Saturday, so I started on the 17th of April, and I was supposed to appear before the portfolio committee, I think on the 19th of October or 20th, that week.
Same week.
Same week. So, Chairperson, it was there. But what I'm saying is that I was accused as if I am the one who did all those, and the very same person was appointed by them as members. Because when the Deputy Public Protector is appointed, the Public Protector is not even consulted on you, are not even asked anything. So, but then they told me, you need to deal with it. What policies do you have? We cannot afford to do this. But I'm saying, Chairperson, that it was because it was widely reported, our interviews, where he was asked questions about his security clearance, citizenship, how he came into the country. So those were the issues which were deliberated. It's not me.
Okay. All right. Now that's, I think that puts it into perspective. And you're saying even then the whole issue was magnified because
exactly.
After all you were a spy, quote unquote.
Thank you.
Okay.
We will pause there.
Thank you, sir.
And take a 10-minute tea break. Like 5 to 12. Thank you.
Thanks.